I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories.
Hi, it's Susan Montanaro. I had the great pleasure to sit down with Karen Warner Schuler, a master of applied positive psychology, executive coach, speaker, and author, to discuss her new book, The Sudden Caregiver, A Roadmap for Resilient Caregiving. Karen has written a practical guide, a roadmap, and a comfort source for anyone caring for a loved one, especially those for whom the role was sudden. Karen and I also share the importance of self-care through it all. Not easy to do, but critical for all caregivers. As someone who runs grief and caregiver groups, I plan to keep this book close to me to reference and to share the tools of wisdom that Karen has created. Please welcome Karen Warner Schuler.
Well, Karen, I'm glad we're doing this today. I'm really happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So happy to be here.
Yes. And I think the coolest part about the book that you've written is that, and it is The Sudden Caregiver, A Roadmap for Resilient Caregiving. I think one of the things that I love so much about it is you really dug in on a variety of levels. So yes, you've done a lot of research and you've included a lot of statistical data, which is critical just to support what like we go through in life and we know these things, we have these strong feelings and we have the gut instincts. And you have your own, obviously, your own experience and story to tell, but you know, you back it up by really what's going on well beyond the world that you live in and the handful or more of people that you may have come in contact with that might have some shared or similar experiences. And so I really feel like it was such a thorough, you know, kind of collective, if you will, and roadmap to really give people tools to move forward. Caregiving is huge, as you know, in this country for so many different types of situations. And COVID certainly has added to that tremendously. So I'll turn it over to you to let you speak a little bit more about the why and the how this book came together. But really, thank you and congratulations for putting this out into the world, because I feel like this is definitely a tool that many people will benefit from.
Susan, thank you so much. I really appreciate you noting all of the 16 pages of references and notes in the back of the book, because as I started to write it, it began as a personal story, which I'll describe. And as it went along, I realized so many other people were reaching out to me who are caregivers. And like you say, it's huge, but also it's like our fingerprints. No one caregiving situation is alike. And yet there's a Venn diagram where all of us experience the same sets of things. And how do you deal with those? And I also had just completed my master's degree in positive psychology. So I was in the habit of backing up everything I asserted with, is that true? Is that evidence-based?
Right.
So thanks for that. And it really is, you can skip that stuff if it's not important to you, but to some people it's really important to know. It's just not my opinion. But my story is that I'm an executive coach, and I was away from home doing a leadership development workshop. And my now late husband called me and he said, you know, I'm in a lot of pain. And it was a moment where I thought I was out of patience with him having back pain, because the entire summer before this moment, we had been talking about this back pain that he had, and he wouldn't go to the hospital. He wouldn't see a doctor. He was just sort of living with it. And here I am, I'm working, I have a full day, and I really wasn't in a position to help him. So I said, call our friend and let him take you to the ER. And so I actually went back to my room, fell asleep waiting for him to call me and say, I'm home from the hospital. It's nothing. This is what it is. And he called me at 2:00 in the morning and he said, I have stage 4 cancer. And at that moment, stage 4 is terminal. You simply don't know how much more time you have.
Right.
But I didn't go there right away. Right away, I was like, I'm a professional problem solver. I am just going to get on the first plane, go home, talk to the doctors, figure this out. It cannot possibly be stage 4 cancer. They've got it wrong. And the reason I felt that way is because my husband had no symptoms of cancer, except he had a bad back. And that became that launched our journey as a caregiver and care receiver. And we were, you know, on a raft together, just working through this major problem for 18 months. And then he passed away. And after he passed away, I had collected a lot of experience that I felt would help other people along the way.
And so it's interesting because you are a problem solver. You have been in your executive coaching position for a couple of decades. You've been running this incredible business, really taking and leading people down a variety of professional paths. I'm sure that there is so much personal that goes on in that space as well, because we're 360, 100%, you know, humans. And so, right, it's, you end up touching other parts of people. So I imagine that you went immediately into the mode of strategy and planning and all of the tools that you perfected and really were consistently helping others perfect or at least develop in their own lives. And that must have been a rush for you, especially, well, denial isn't completely, you know, an unreasonable first reaction, especially with a loved one. But I imagine you really had, must have had such a surge of, no, I can organize this. I can figure this out.
Well, it's now looking back on it, everyone who knows me will say, of course you wrote a book and of course you have infographics in it. Of course you've taken this really thorny, difficult, heart-wrenching experience of caregiving and losing a spouse and turned it into just follow this roadmap and here are some tips. However, in the very beginning, and this is actually very important for your listeners who are caregivers, the first thing in the sudden part of sudden caregiving, I really believed other people in the medical community, our medical team, all the people, the nurses and doctors that we were interacting with while we set up treatment, I thought they had every answer there was to have. So it's Thanksgiving dinner. Do we get in the car and drive to the spa, which we had planned, or should we not do that? I'm asking my husband's doctors those questions. And my questions were really health-wise, is it okay for him to sit because he had a bad back? Can he be 2 hours outside of Boston in case we need to be? But those were not, it's not their job to answer those questions. Right. And so that was the enlightenment, the moment that light bulb went off. And I said, I really am the person who has to know how to find answers to those questions. And that is what sparked the idea early on that if the caregiver has to know, what are the questions and where do we get the answers? And that's really in part why I decided it's got to be a roadmap. You're in crisis, do these things. You're in as normal as possible, do these things.
So, absolutely. And coming up, and you're right, coming up with the questions, which would come naturally, but also once you start to sit down and think about it, the questions start to flow up and you start to think about all the things that are in front of you, life and every day and all of the decisions that you have to make on a regular basis. So you almost have to back into your life with better understanding, better information. And create, I mean, I'm similar in terms of, I like everything laid out. I like a plan. I'm very visual. So charts or lists are my thing. That's my jam. It makes sense to me. But also I love the idea of creating resources and resource files, you know, based on categories. That's always been the way that I work and live my life. So I feel like everything is sort of in control and organized when it's in those different types of formats. So I don't doubt that for someone with, like, again, with your background, that it made a lot of sense to organize the information quickly, especially because you had to find it. And it wasn't just, oh, I'm going to get a book, or, oh, I can make that call, whether it's to a doctor or to someone else. It wasn't like just a one-stop shop in terms of answers or resource for all that you might be experiencing. Oh, and sure. I honestly, like you, I would have thought the same thing. Like, I don't want to even breathe differently or take deep breaths if that means that it's going to be problematic or it's going to contribute in a negative fashion. I would have asked everyone, like, deep breathing okay? Like, honestly.
It's so true. And I did, the also impetus for getting organized right away is I was so afraid someone was going to ask me a question and I would not have the information at my fingertips. I am not naturally, I'm more a creative person, not naturally an organized person, but I've over the years put this kind of, okay, especially strategically chunking organ information so that other people can understand it and access it.
Okay, fantastic. I know that your book was coming out just prior to COVID, like literally actually as it was unfolding, and you did have the chance and opportunity to make a tweak to it. Because I really want to dive into the caregiving role and all that, you know, you had to become and all that you're sharing now. So you had a chance to put an extra message in, which I thought was beautiful and, you know, timely, quite honestly. So how serendipitous was that? But I also think that it's also brought into light this idea that caregiving is both, you know, hands-on person in front of you. And also in the COVID days, you know, great distance sometimes and potentially separation. And how do I continue to give care without the person in the, even in the same room or home as I am in? So no doubt that became a struggle for many, adding to the already very difficult role that they play. Since your situation and your story about your former and deceased husband is a couple of years now, how did you navigate the channels of what this past year or 18 months might have been like and how you can complement what you've already learned in your own life to the current crisis people are facing?
Well, the first thing I did, so the book was ready to go, as you say, right. We had never heard of COVID. And I was ready to send it into production and I held off. Then I waited 6 months. So because I wanted, but I wasn't thinking I'll add something about COVID, but one day I read it and said, there's nothing about COVID in here. And every single moment of our lives was during that year, especially governed by COVID pre-vaccine. So I was very, very cautious about how do I don't want to go out in the world with a message and just say, oh, so here's how you do caregiving and have a caregiver who's in the thick of it go, well, she doesn't even talk about COVID in here. So I slowed it down and I started researching, talking to doctors, talking to the medical community and talking to caregivers. And what I found is that caregiving during COVID increased everybody's anxiety for reasons like if I run to the grocery store to pick up my mom's groceries and I take them to my mom's home and she gets COVID, did I cause her COVID? And it's that fear that you're just, as things are already bad as a caregiver, you're going to make things worse. But what I found was that everything that already was in my book, and my emphasis in my book is not just what to do, because that's chapter 3, but chapter 2, which is how to be as a caregiver. So what I realized was that chapter especially was going to be helpful for COVID caregivers, because it talks about building a practice of resilience, not letting yourself go under the wheels of how hard things are. I would say the two biggest things that were made most difficult during COVID, well, three. One is the ascendancy of telehealth, which is good. There's a silver lining, which is you as a caregiver can now have a medical consult, which caregivers are notoriously not doing. But when you have, if you're caring for someone who's elderly, who's not technically savvy, the idea that that person is going to sit in front of a computer and talk to their doctor is just, it's so foreign. So we really struggled with that. Privacy. If you were part of a caregiving support group or you had a therapist or even just a coach you could talk to, where were you going to do that in your home when the person you're caring for is right in the other room? So that was a really, really tricky thing. And then the third thing is just how the work just multiplied. It's the same work, but it just becomes harder, more. Everything is a strategy to get from point A to point B.
Right. And I imagine for the caregivers who either don't live with or maybe even do live with the cared for individual, I imagine that being 24/7 in their homes or in their environments became really tricky, because now self-care or any separation from that very large task in their lives, you know, look, I run caregiver groups, and I know how much the individuals that I speak with love the people that they're caring for. I get it. But they too are humans and individuals who run out of patience, who become frustrated, and who need to have something that just is their own, whether it's coffee with a girlfriend or, you know, a colleague. They just need that place and space. Usually it's the car just to take a drive, but, you know, and put some music on, right? Or make a phone call that they want to make as opposed to need to make. But, you know, during this past, you know, year and a half, what have you, almost 2 years now, it's hard to say that it's 2 years now. Oh my gosh. It's very frustrating for people to find that space. So no doubt it posed a whole set of challenges, even though there were silver linings and I saw them all too. So I clearly am on that side of it, but I know it posed a bunch of challenges for people that weren't ready for that. You know, they were not equipped necessarily to welcome that isolation in. So
true. And this is also for your caregiver listeners, you have to absolutely carve out time for yourself. It doesn't matter. Again, it's easy to say, I can't because, you know, my son's working from home over there. My person I'm caring for is taking a nap in the living room. No, I can't. But I would challenge every caregiver to find a half an hour, 15 minutes. If you could find 15 minutes every single day, there is research that says caregiving is so depleting that sort of 24/7 I'm always on. I may not always be in crisis or in an emergency situation, but just this is my job and I don't want it not to be my job, because that means I'll lose this person. So now I've got that tension between I want to do it. I want to be here. I want to be the best version of myself, and I'm human and I'm imperfect. So I always encourage people, if you are depleting your energy just by status quo caregiving, find that time. So if you spend 15 minutes, you're going to get an hour back of energy. Not, the research doesn't give us those units of measure, but there is research that says you can replenish your energy just by taking those breaks.
I totally believe that. I am so on board. I think 15, and it sounds small, but 15 minutes, even that shortest window of time, you can laugh, move your body, and find so much joy in just 15 minutes that I am absolutely certain it will change your physiology. Absolutely certain. Yeah. That it will do that. And it changes everything about what's going on in your life. And you're right. And I think the other thing to note, which, you know, also comes up in the groups I've been part of, is the idea of moving out of the emotional crisis mode, because not every moment is actually a crisis. I think in totality, it probably feels like the entire thing is, but not every moment needs to actually be, you don't need to operate from that place. And I think that is also what maybe people are getting caught up in, and it further depletes their energy and their ability to focus or even see beyond the day. Now, I say that, and I do understand and respect that depending on the circumstances and the disease at hand and what that caregiving looks like for a person, you know, it is easier to say that, but I still think emotionally, that's the point of our groups, is to move people into a headspace where it does fluctuate and they should be allowed to fluctuate so that they can come down into a peaceful place and they can have those moments of joy or find that time or take a bath or take the drive, you know, but get everything out of it that it's intended to provide and really take care.
Yeah. In my book, I talk about something called the caregiver's paradox, which is on that point. So when I first became a caregiver, I started Googling, you know, for scholarly articles on caregiving and books on Amazon. And I wasn't finding anything that talked about how to be me as a caregiver. I found a lot about the skill set you need to help the person in your care. And the one thing that I noticed was all the articles and things I read always started with how terrible caregiving is. It's I'm worried about money. I'm worried about time. I have way too much on my plate. No one will help me. I've got to deal with these relatives that say they want to help, but they don't really do anything. And on and on. And that all is true. And it wasn't my only experience. And so I could take some of it on board, but I couldn't rationalize all of it. And then I found a study, just one graphic in the back of a pile of graphics in the Forum on Aging, which is a document I was using for research. And it was just this graphic, and they asked caregivers to rate the positive and negative experiences of caregivers. So they asked, like, are you running out of time? Do you worry about, you know, are you physically strong enough, emotionally strong enough? And the caregivers all sort of rated what you would expect. Like, it's a significant impact. And then they asked positive things like, do you feel closer to the person in your care because of caregiving? Do you feel like you're doing a good job as a caregiver? And the caregivers on those questions rated them, like if one was around 40 or 50% significant impact, they rated 80-90% significant impact. And that was it. It's like, there it is, the caregiver paradox, because it's both. It is both really trying over a long haul. And it has these moments that are positive. If you can pause and recognize them and accept them and not just throw them away or say, oh, that was a day. That's an aberration. It's not really this way.
I love that you just said that, because I often find or believe and then see it come true that caregivers aren't giving themselves enough credit, but dwelling in the agony and the downside of what their life has turned into is very high. And, you know, again, it's not a blame game. It's understandable that someone can immediately feel like they're sinking in, you know, a pool that's very hectic and deep at times and crazy and murky. I mean, there's just so much going on, and your life is so not yours anymore. You really are living for two, and you really are doing the job of two. And so, and of course, depending on how complicated things might be, either financially or medically, it just adds to what you're dealing with. But turning around and assuring or giving a compliment like to a caregiver, which I did recently, it was just, you know, gosh, you really are pretty spectacular and you're doing such an amazing job. I bet your wife must really feel the love, even though she can't verbalize that, but you can see her eyes. And, you know, this man just like lit up and thought, like, that's right. And it was just a good reminder that, you know, you're doing this great job. And there is this wonderful side that is existing alongside the really challenging and trying aspects of this. And we cannot lose sight of that. And I just think, well, my hope, of course, is that more and more people who attend groups or really run the groups, and I do this because I know it matters, are bringing that element into the conversation, because it shouldn't just be a place to unravel or let loose. Certainly it is that, but commiseration only goes so far. And then you really need to say, you know, but how do we turn this around, and how do we see the love and the beauty and the positive aspects? Because we cannot forget, again, that the one massive and absolute certainty is that we don't live forever. And so in many of these cases, it's like you had started initially when you said terminal four, it's about when at that point in time. And so you just want to affirm, and you want, you know, that's where the gold stars belong. Yeah. That's where the gold stars belong.
That's such good work that you're doing to say that. And it is something we don't give our people around us are worried about. How is he doing? What, you know,
are you asking them for help, and they may not be able to.
Yeah. And so they're rightly so focused on the person in your care, but you don't often get that recognition. And there's a model called PERMA that comes out of positive psychology. Are you familiar with it?
I did look it up. So the Martin Seligman, yes, I love it.
So I studied with him at University of Pennsylvania, which is the mothership of positive psychology. And that's what I found when I started talking to caregivers and looking at the lived experience research, they would talk about positive emotions. So I feel proud. That was a hard day. I did it, that kind of thing. Or I have more love for this person. There's engagement. As a caregiver, you don't think of yourself as being engaged. You're just getting up and doing whatever you need to do. But there was no work I would rather have been doing than being in that caregiving situation. And so every day was, how can I do it better? How can I do more? What does this person need from me? And then the R stands for relationships, positive relationships. And I heard this over and over again. It was certainly true for me. I am closer to this person in my care than I ever thought I would be. My husband and I were consultants. We both traveled a lot. I was always here. He was always there. And we had a good marriage. We were happy. But becoming his caregiver and him becoming my care receiver, it forged a bond that I think we might never have had. So yes, that's a silver lining, but it's more than that. I get to know that there was this great love that I would maybe was taking for granted, and maybe he was too, until we had this massive problem that drew us together. Mm-hmm. So that's relationship, and then meaning and accomplishment. So one thing that caregivers will say over and over again is, this is my purpose in life. I believe this is what I'm supposed to be here to do. Do I want it? Would I want something else for this person besides, you know, the illness that they have? Yes. But since I'm put in the space where I can do something about it, it brings great meaning to my life. And then the last is accomplishment, achievement. I can look back on that situation and go, I'm a selfish person, like I'm first to say, and I was not in this period of time. I was able to accomplish what was required and what was needed for my husband to his satisfaction, which was the only measure.
That's brilliant. And I think that's beautiful. And not everyone might feel that way on any given day, I think, again, when given the opportunity to stop, look out and reflect on what's going on and kind of pull yourself back out, you know, open the lens up to look across it in a bigger way. Nothing should prohibit anyone from being able to do that much. Take the step back because it doesn't cost you anything. You know, it's just stopping and giving yourself a moment to look across and say, you know, everything that is going on here, how can I look at this in a way that can feel more enriching to what our relationship or our dynamic is all about, even if it's a parental situation. You know, it isn't always between husband and wife. It could be between, you know, parents and child, and it can certainly be between siblings for that matter. But as the caregiver, clearly it is with someone who you have something deeper with than not. And therefore, the circumstances, you must find the silver lining in them. You must see what this is all about and sort of the why, if you will, right? There's always that, well, this is how we're rounding out what's between us. This is what it's come to. And, you know, maybe even I'm so grateful it was me and not someone else, or I'm so grateful that I could figure out how to do this, even if I want to pull my hair out, you know what I mean? And I am losing my mind sometimes, and certainly my energy levels and my patience, but you know, the only thing you'd want to change is for the disease and the circumstances like that to be different. Let's face
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 As you said, different days, different happy levels of happiness. But I would say PERMA, if you're going to take a step back, PERMA, which you can Google it, it's out there. It's in the space of positive psychology. And I just spelled it out. It's in my book.
Yes.
But you can look at PERMA, each of those five elements, and you can rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 5. How positive do I feel emotionally? On a scale of 1 to 5, what about the relationships around me? Are they feeding me? Are they nurturing me? And then if you can do that, you can ignore the fives, that everything's great. But if you got a 1 or a 2 in there, you might say, all right, I'm just going to focus on this. There's also a vitality piece that's been added to that model. And that is a really focus on the caregiver's health. So, and those those elements, that emotions, relationships, engagement, meaning, accomplishment, vitality, when you're in the presence of all six of those things, you're in the presence of well-being. That's the point. So if you want to work on your own well-being, it helps if you can identify. It's a map. It's not the territory, as all the things I do as a coach, but it's a way to sort of get in and have that conversation with yourself, especially about self-care.
No, I think that's brilliant. It's another way for you to really have a better understanding of where you are at any given time, so that you can, like you said, tweak or latch on to the strongest areas. Keep being mindful about where you might need some support or you might need to pay a little bit more attention. But certainly, I would think in the engagement part of things and like who and what is coming toward you and what is coming in and is it serving and is it helpful and supportive? And if not, you know, we have to remove those parts and those situations and create an environment that is working. I love this probably because I'm kind of steeped in this kind of group therapy and I find it to be really important. And anything, I'm a big cheerleader. I would say that that's like, you know, my hallmark skill and element that I'm always cheering people on. But certainly when it comes to taking care and being kind to ourselves, I think that we often in life will miss that and not recognize it soon enough. But certainly when you're in a position where you're digging deeper, you still have to be kind to yourself. You know, I mean, I know people deal with guilt, the survival guilt or the health guilt. Did you have any experiences or moments where you had guilt come up for you at all? Because I find that comes up in our groups as well.
Well, I write about it in my book. I put one anecdote in of the many that happened because the guilt for me was I'm imperfect, right? We were together for 20 years. And so we were still those people who would fight about, well, I don't feel like cooking dinner and you don't want to go out to eat it, as if it matters, right? We're dealing with a limited number of hours on earth, but we're still fighting about those stupid things or who's going to pay the taxes or who, you know, you always take too long to get me your books and that kind of thing where, So they would turn into the fights they always turned into. And those are the things that I wish now I could just, why wasn't I more perfect, you know, more sympathetic and empathetic? And so I do tell one story in my book, and I was urged to I was in a small writing group, because they read it and they said, this looks like two really perfect people. You're smart and you have money and you know how to do everything and everything's perfect. And we were lucky to be in the situation we were in for sure. But one thing we were not was a perfect couple. And I think it's important. I think everyone could make that statement, anyone who's in a long-term relationship. So I talk about one of the lessons I learned after I lost my husband was to grant myself grace. That in a way, that guilt, I think, can also be a form of grieving, because the minute that I became a caregiver, my life was over and it wasn't coming back. And what all I wanted was this new normal life that we had to last as long as it could possibly last. But yeah, I would say that was probably the worst of it, was just managing my own frustration, my own anger, my own sadness.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't imagine, but I do empathize with being in that situation, because it doesn't ever return to what was, and it is forever now different. And for you, of course, it would take on a few different kind of changes and turns until inevitably you were then going through a different kind of grief and a different kind of change permanently, semi-permanently, as we all know, because life continues to morph into its new version. But it's hard. And that's definitely an area, the guilt part, or even just trying to help someone sort out self-care, you know, often it's met with, you know, anger and then guilt at the same time. Anger that they don't feel they have a right or they don't have the time for it. And then, of course, the guilt of who am I to want such a moment like, you know, peace or joy or happiness or how do I laugh, you know, but yeah. Really important to do.
It is. And I would say I did make peace with that part of the guilt, which is my husband was sitting at lunch shortly after he was diagnosed. And he said to me, does everybody know I'm going to die but me? And it was that moment of, if it could be me, I would replace you. Like he had such a big footprint in the world. He did so much good in the world. And how do you answer that question? You know, and I answered that by going to a positive narrative, like, look, yes, this is bad. And I drew the bell curve that I had seen in medical reports about, you know, people who were diagnosed with what you have. I would say, I think it was 10% die now in the first 6 months from diagnosis. Many more die in the belly of the curve at 18 months. And then there are still some living out here in the long, thin tail to the right, you know, and in 5 years. And what we were going for, so this is how I answered that. We're all going to die. I want to get you to the 5-year point. And then maybe by then, the medical treatments that were all the developments will come along and this will no longer be the terminal disease. That was our battle cry. And that we embraced that. And we reminded each other of that all along the way. And I could say he was, before cancer, he was never sick. He was incredibly healthy. And he worked out 6 days a week. And he always annoyingly ate exactly the right thing. And there was no salt. He took supplements. And, you know, there was no like three martini line. He was just incredibly healthy, physically fit. And so for him to be the one, and that was our thing. That's what I said to him, that the only rational thought I could give him was, these are statistics of like everyone in the world who has this. And they, you know, they could be disadvantaged. They could have not been well going into it. You're so well, I think we have a shot at this, you know, 5-year mark. And that's how we did everything.
Not a bad approach. I think positivity and keeping the right mindset are always going to be essential. I think it's the way people should live their lives without being given a terminal illness, quite honestly. So yeah. I think that was really smart of you to approach it from that angle and to suggest that that was the better way to take this journey.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's not a Pollyanna thing. I wasn't saying we're just going to wish this when it goes away. We're not going to acknowledge it. And we made a deal. Like I was the one who tracked the treatments and tracked the cancer and read all the medical reports. And then his thing was, I don't want to see it unless you think it's something I absolutely have to know. And that enabled him to continue working, continuing doing all the things that he did in the world. And it allowed me, what I say in my book is, plan for the,
hope for the best and plan for the worst.
I
wrote your quote down. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. And that was really helpful. So, and that comforted me as a planner, as someone who wants to plan the unplannable and predict the unpredictable. It was very helpful to me to be able to organize our world.
But that was such a gift that you gave him too. Like what a beautiful gift and what a beautiful form of love to take that on and say, yeah, this, I'm going to bear that. And I'm going to keep you in the dark as much as you need to be so that you don't need the added emotional weight of some of the details that won't serve you or change right. anything, but to know, because 20 years allows you to really know a person, to know exactly when he needed to know what. I mean, that's just a beautiful gift.
Yeah. Thank you. It's not for everyone and not everyone.
Certainly
would
not.
Want that. Yeah.
Right.
I have friends, my friend, Jessica, who I talk about in the book, her husband got a terminal diagnosis and he immediately embraced it. Like the Tibetan rituals of death. And he, he wrote a blog about it. I know a lot of people have done things like that. Like, I'm embracing my journey into death. Mm-hmm. We were not those people. So
yeah. And many people aren't. So, you know, many people aren't. They just need to get through it and navigate the channels as they come up. So this is fantastic. So your book is now out there and for the readers to grab onto. And so obviously we look forward to making sure that they have all of those details. Are you able to do different types of even digital book tours, or how are you getting out there and having conversations? And really, I think my bigger question was, what are you finding out in, you know, the media or out in the landscape of the space that you're in promoting this book? Because I imagine you're having that many more conversations potentially with people that are in this situation or had been.
Yeah, what I find is, so one mission that I'm on with my book is to get it into the hands of as many caregivers as possible. So I'm now working on an audio version of it. So because caregivers will say, I don't have time to read, or I don't read. A lot of people just are not going to pick that book up. But one thing that I want to make sure I do is get information, however people need to access it, about self-care, about how to be a caregiver, how to build your own resilience. So what I'm finding is a lot of interest from communities with audiences like yours, like the name of your podcast, right? It's Detours and Dreams.
So dreams and detours, yeah.
So I equate those two because they're kind of the same, and that's what caregiving is, right? So it's that idea of doing your best in spite of what's been happening. As far as a book tour, the book came out, I finally released it in February of 2021. Mm-hmm. So we did a virtual book tour. And I honestly think I got more exposure and coverage because everyone was just, you know, a TV station would say, well, let's put her on for 5 minutes and it would be in San Antonio or Chicago, right, or someplace.
That's not brilliant.
Just my local market. So yeah, that has been it. No. It another silver lining of COVID.
Oh no, absolutely. I did. I have heard that from a few different people who have published in the last like 12 months or so. And they were like, well, you know, I was able to get some airtime and people have been parked. So getting even their attention or to tune in has been a bit easier than typically what we would find. So that's been pretty brilliant as well. I look forward to being able to utilize this as a tool, you know, it's interesting. I often have conversations about grief and bereavement. I run grief and bereavement groups. I love that as well. And when I say love, I love guiding people into a better place, a kinder place for themselves. And this in the caregiver environment, it's similar. It's just anything we can do to bring a person to that place where they can give to themselves or recognize themselves. And so I love the fact that this tool is now in my possession to utilize in those spaces. Yeah, it's going to just be brilliant.
Yeah, and I do want people to know there are resources beyond what you think or imagine. Caregiving is often you're in the role for the first time. You didn't go to school for caregiving, graduate with a degree in it, so when you find yourself as a caregiver and the tsunami of care is upon you, you don't realize that all around you there are people like yourself who work in caregiving support groups, who know the problems that you're going to have, who are able to lead you through. I have a website and I have a resources tab on my website. It's thesuddencaregiver.com. And there's a resources tab. And I put it there because I was just spending money that, you know, it's expensive. It's about, for most out of pocket, is about $5,000 a year for the average caregiver. And I didn't even stop to ask. One time I was talking about getting a walker for my husband. And I asked the volunteer at the house, like, where do you think I can get that? And she goes, well, why don't you just go to Council on Aging? They're right around the corner and they'll just give it to you. And when you're done with it, you bring it back. And I had no idea. And it was in my town that I lived in for 30 years. So those kinds of things are available in all communities in the United States. They probably actually do better in some European countries than they do in the United States because of nationalized healthcare.
Right. No doubt. But that's brilliant. And thank you for reminding the listeners about that. It is absolutely a link I will highlight because, you know, resources for those who just don't have the means. But even if you do, you should still know what's available to you because it's not always about the financial elements that we're referring to. It could be about support, which is a different kind of priceless dynamic and tool to utilize. But yes, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. I mean, if you're caring for someone who's a veteran, for example, they're special. There are ways to have some of this underwritten. I talk about it in my book, but it's really depending on the disease state you're working with and the care situation. There are so many sources and just starting that journey and just, you know, I found when you click on one link, it led to another link, another link, another link,
but doesn't it? Yeah, no, it does. And that's beautiful. So yeah, thank you so much for mentioning that. And thank you for being here today. I do, again, I love talking about this conversation because I feel like anything that we can do to bring a positive or supportive tools and skills to those who are in this position, then, you know, we're really kind of serving the world in our aftermath of what we might've experienced ourselves. And that's exactly what you've done. So I really can't thank you enough for that.
Thank you for having me on. This is just a tremendous conversation to be having. And thank you for the work you're doing with caregivers and grief support. It's a heavy load sometimes live in that world.
Yeah, someone's got to do it. And I'm happy to be that person. So it's brilliant. Yay, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.